including traffic violations, whether or not any other offenses arose out of the conduct that got them arrested and convicted in the first place. So it's a one-time deal.
Questions on the amendment?
We have
an amendment?
Excuse me?
And the other amendment?
The other amendment is Exhibit C, which was, I believe, handed to the committee by Mr. Collins, who's going to be testifying, which is an amendment which I will reluctantly agree with in order to, I believe, gain the support of the District Attorneys Association. What that amendment does, if you all have that in front of you, is require someone to be arrest-free for 3 years immediately preceding seeking to seal an arrest. It deals with the sealing of arrests only. Now, the reason I say I reluctantly agree to that is because I believe that at least the case law would allow a court to deny a person's motion to seal if they feel their conduct has not been up to par, up to the standards of the court. And in fact, the State versus Green case, which is cited at the bottom of the first page of my testimony, so holds. That it is discretionary with the court whether or not to grant this motion to seal the records. However, this amendment in Exhibit C would make that clear to the court and would take it out of their discretionary power. I don't have too much trouble with that and would concur in order to get the support of the district attorneys.
The questions on either of the proposed amendments? We're going to hear from Mr. Collins.
I don't know. Mr. Collins, do you wish to comment on that one amendment?
Maybe even on the entire rest of the board.
Come on up. Stay right there.
Okay. For the record, I'm John Collins, president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association and Yamhill County District Attorney. Myself and Mr. Sandrock signed up to oppose this bill. We had voiced our opposition at the Senate level by letter only, frankly, and we did not get in there for testimony, but we have caught up with the bill at this hearing. We came here prepared to testify against it because I think it goes far beyond what even the drafters intended it to. I have, however, met with Mr. Donahue in the hallway and in the back of the room here today, and I think we have come to a point where the Oregon District Attorneys Association no longer opposes the bill if those amendments are attached. Our concern was that, for example, a person might be arrested for three crimes, and as often happens, he might plead guilty to one, and the other two would be dismissed as a part of a plea negotiation. Without the Amendment B, that person would have been able to expunge those two other arrests. As district attorneys, we want those two other arrests on the record because we want to know that, in fact, that prior conviction was part of a plea negotiation. And the courts at sentencing are going to want to know that. Parole board is going to want to know that. A lot of people are going to want to know the existence of those other arrests. On B, our concern is, I guess I should say this, the DA's Association does not disagree with the fundamental concept that that person who is arrested on a one-time or very limited time basis ought not to be able to get their conviction expunged. We think, or their arrest expunged. We agree that it does seem like an anomaly that the person has to get convicted before they could get it expunged. The Amendment C that we discussed before bringing it to this committee today was meant to address the situation where the person receives multiple arrests over a period of time. Under the amendment, or excuse me, under the original bill, it would appear as though that person could get all of those arrests expunged, provided that there wasn't any convictions. It's not uncommon to have that situation arise with multiple arrests over a period of time, and we want to at least limit that to the scope of a person who only gets arrested once every 3 years. And that's basically the compromise we worked out in the amendment number C. The DA's Association, in other words, supports the bill with those amendments.
Questions?
Mr. Smith, there was a celebrated case recently where a black man, I believe somewhere in the Midwest, was repeatedly being arrested, and I think, I don't remember whether the holding was, it was some form of harassment or just what it was, but he couldn't be stopped. Was it? He couldn't be stopped repeatedly just because he was a suspicious-looking person. But I think he was arrested on a number of occasions, but no convictions ensued. And wouldn't that be an example of where Exhibit C would still fail to do equity? He would have all these arrests just for looking suspicious, always released, never a conviction, and no opportunity for expunction, if I understand the way this works.
With limited opportunity to think about that very, very long, I tend to think that you're right. It probably would not address that situation. Balanced against that are many other situations that don't have those kinds of equities involved.
Further discussion? Questions, rather? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The motion on either exhibits B or C or no?
I move the amendment.
Lombard moves the amendments.
It's Rutherford, I guess, Mr. Chairman.
So Rutherford moves the amendments.
Four sessions, 8 years with this guy.
Representative Miller, or excuse me, Hill. Oh, Stevie, I'm sorry, come up.
Glad they gave us name tags.
Chairman Wires.
I mean, Myers.
Chairman Wires, yeah.
Chairman Wires.
That was below the
bell. Hardy Wires. Proceed.
Stevie Remington from the ACLU of Oregon. I am not going to oppose this bill if this amendment is adopted, because it would at least take part, give some relief more than is now present for a large number of people. I am very distressed by the effects of the proposed amendment by the District Attorneys Association. I would like to remind you that not only in the nation, but particularly in the city of Portland, there is a very clear pattern of racial discrimination and arrest. And a black male living in an urban area has a 95% chance of being arrested at least once in his lifetime. And there are repeated arrests of blacks in situations where white suburbanites are cited only. Many of them for very minor offenses. In Gregory v. Litton Industries, which is an employment discrimination case where the Ninth Circuit held that they could not discriminate on the basis of arrest records because of this racially discriminatory aspect, the man who brought the suit was a black man who had been arrested 14 times and never convicted, and the charges range from vagrancy, loitering, refusing to identify oneself, and the usual pattern. And the recent California case is the same. But let me give you some other instances that have come across my desk. I had a man call me wondering about what he could do. He had been arrested by an officer in Portland and had been brought to arraignment, and the DA moved to dismiss the charge. The charge was dismissed, and as he left the courthouse, the same officer arrested him on the same charge. I once had a call from a man who had been thought to be AWOL at one time from the military. It turned out to be an error, but a warrant had been issued. A few months later, he is arrested in Texas and held for some 10 days on a warrant from the military. They finally straightened it out, assure him that they'll take care of the error and get it off the computer. But he was arrested two more times within a 6 month period and held from 10 days to 30 days on a faulty record. Another man was arrested twice and on the second occasion shot on his way to his father's funeral. He was not killed, but he had had his car had been stolen. He had reported it stolen and then got arrested because although he recovered it, he was charged with stealing his own car because the warrant is still out. And on the second occasion, he was distressed and the officer thought he was reaching for a firearm or something and he was actually shot. Those are egregious circumstances, but that amendment, as proposed by the district attorneys, would in each case, I believe, work an inequity. And especially when you think of the people that are still arrested, sometimes under municipal ordinances that have not been brought up to date and are unconstitutional in and of themselves. And it seems to me that an arrest should be merely that, an arrest, and no proof, nothing should remain to cause that person a problem, and especially where they are arrested under unconstitutional statutes. As I say, I certainly won't go down and oppose the bill on the floor if this amendment's adopted, but I don't think it is crafted to deal with what may be legitimate concerns and that it wreaks a hardship on a lot of innocent people.
Why don't we take the minutes separately for both? If there's no objection, there's no wrong. It might be differing views between the two amendments.
No.
Which one, B or C?
B. Unless someone can identify for me, I don't see the verb and object of this sentence. In B.
Yeah, that's
the one
I don't
have.
I
have
got my
own. Did
we take your
letter?
You
came with his letter.
I didn't get the letter. Oh, is that?
What? Well, my question is whether there's a verb.
The verb is in 6. It starts out.
Oh, this is on 6B. I'm sorry. I was putting this into 1. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just putting this.
Well, this has to be a sentence.
No, it goes on 2. I don't know where it starts.
523.
Oh,
does
it
does not apply to. Okay, I'm sorry. I was putting it into the B on page 1.
Is there any objection to the adoption of Exhibit B?
Can I make sure what we're... In the current bill, it says within 10 years, more than one offense, evidently misdemeanor and up, and you cannot be expunged under 1B on page 1.
But this...
Exhibit B says anything within a 10-year period, any convictions within a 10-year period will not allow
excluding the vehicle violations.
Yeah. But that's what we're doing, is cutting it from two, more than one conviction to one conviction.
I see a nod, okay.
The reason that that was, the way it reads now, this B, 6B on line 25 of page 2, is, except for the changing from the his to the, is the way that it reads in the present law. And the present law only deals with convictions. So when they say more than one offense, they have to say that because there's already going to be a conviction to be expunged. And the more than one means that there would be another conviction. Therefore, there would be the one seeking to be expunged plus one other one within that 10-year period, and therefore the person would not be able to expunge that conviction. Well, when we added an arrest, there doesn't necessarily have to be any convictions once the person is arrested, and therefore we changed the language to simply say any other offense.
Okay.
Is there objection to Exhibit B? Discussion of Exhibit C. Call the roll, please, on the motion Exhibit C.
Courtney.
S.
Bill.
Exhibit C.
C.
Did you have a question?
No.
Aye. Miller.
Aye.
Guevara.
No.
Mims.
Aye.
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
6-3.
6-3.
6-3.
6-3.
Early discussion of the bill is amended.
Or do pass.
Is there a court being moved, Senate Bill 714 as amended, be reported with a due pass recommendation? Call the roll, please. 741.
Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Lawler?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Yes.
Trigger?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
491, Ed Davis, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ed Davis, representing the City of Portland. What I've handed you there is a summary of my testimony, a summary of testimony by Jewel Lansing, the auditor for the City of Portland, also a letter of support from the City of Salem, and also some statistics from the Multnomah County District Court having to do with traffic infractions. I'd like to note that in my testimony, I talked with Judge Nellie Johnson today, and she stated that it was 3-4% of all infractions go to trial. But I see that it's around a little bit less than 5, so it's a little bit off. What this bill will do is it allows another option to a defendant in a traffic infraction case. Currently, the defendant in a traffic infraction case can plead guilty, send in their fine with a letter of mitigation, plead not guilty or no contest and send in a letter of mitigation, and they never appear, or plead not guilty and request a trial.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Currently, when a defendant pleads not guilty and requests a trial, this usually either calls for bringing a police officer in on overtime because it's his day off or it's not a shift, or pulling an officer in that is actually working at that time on the street on other duties to come in and sit around the courthouse. But I know it's not as bad in many jurisdictions as it is in Multnomah County, but we run into quite a bit of time wasted by the police officers in waiting for traffic infractions to go to trial. And the bottom line to this is it costs a lot of money when the police officers are on overtime. The one thing that I'd like to point out is that this bill is not mandatory upon any of the courts in the state. It is a discretionary thing that would allow the courts by a court rule to adopt this procedure as outlined in the statute. Any jurisdiction, no matter how small, that would adopt this would probably start saving money immediately, depending on the size of the jurisdiction and the amount of their court. The District Court Judges Association of Oregon are supportive of this measure, also the Oregon District Attorneys Association, Oregon Peace Officers, Oregon Sheriff's Association, the Oregon Chiefs of Police are also supportive of this measure. There's some fiscal information in there that I won't testify to, but you can look at. You can see that it could, in fact, amount to a significant savings to Multnomah County and the City of Portland. And also the City of Salem brought in some fiscal figures in their letter. If there are any questions.
Questions of Ed?
What does a court, well, two questions. First of all, in a traffic infraction case, the defendant, if indigent, is not entitled to counsel, was there any discussion or consideration about how much such a defendant without the advice of counsel would realize as far as the consequences of making that kind of a waiver? Did that come up at all?
Yes, it did. I'd like to explain to the committee that this is nothing new or strange or inconsistent with notification to the defendant. Presently, their defendant has issued a citation. They read the back of it. It states what they can do. And the first thing is plead guilty, send in the money, and you can send us a letter. You know, as far as knowledgeable waiver of right, when they plead guilty and send in their fine with a letter of mitigation, hoping to get some of it back, you know, they've basically waived everything at that point. They can plead no contest and send in a letter of mitigation, or they can plead not guilty and send in a letter of mitigation. So basically, the decision is theirs at that point. And this is just another option. I'll tell you mechanically what this will do. This sets up a system whereby a defendant, and it would depend on the individual court, the individual district, the way they would set it up, the county. But very basically, the way it would work is the defendant would be given the option to a trial by declaration whereby you can plead not guilty and appear in court with the explanation that the officer will not appear, but his testimony will be brought into evidence by a, quote, affidavit. Now, this can be done on the basis of either the citation itself and the officer's notes or some type of an affidavit which the court may work out to send in. In other words, the defendant can appear with an attorney if they so wish, can make an appearance, and it's their option if they do not want the police officer there. And then the court will listen to their testimony and either read the face of the citation. Judge Johnson was tied up, and also Judge Bearden had a court trial this afternoon and couldn't attend. And Judge Johnson did mention in the Senate side that the vast majority of the 3% of the people that plead not guilty do not have a defense to a traffic infraction. As a matter of fact, it's as she testified, they want to have their say. And usually they, when she asks them, did you or did you not run the red light, they'll say, well, yes, I did, but my accelerator stuck or something like that. In other words, the usual excuse is she said that most of the time they admit to the infraction. So.
Questions, Representative Courtney?
I had a motion and a question, Mr. Chair. Do you want a motion?
I've got a question.
Representative
Scavero, can the defendant send in an affidavit too? Have affidavits?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scavero, yes, they would.
They could.
They would be able to plead not guilty, and if they could not appear and submit. In other words, it's like the letter that's allowed now. They can plead not guilty and submit an affidavit in, submit witnesses, other witnesses like passengers in the vehicle with them or witnesses that saw it. They can submit these affidavits in also. One of the other considerations also is for the defendant in these cases, like a lot of times they find out they show up at their first appearance thinking, well, I'm going to get this case heard and I'll be out of here. The first appearance is merely where they plead guilty or not guilty, and they possibly sit down there for 5 or 6 hours, missed a day's work, only to find out that if they want to plead not guilty and verbally state their case before the court, they have to miss another day's work and come back. And this would allow them to set it up so that it's heard all at once. There wouldn't be a first appearance on it.
Well, that's before I would do pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cornyn, will Senate Bill 491 be referred to the due pass recommendation?
Yeah, you're not carrying the bill, Cornyn. You sit down. I'm carrying it right now.
Hill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Guevara?
Aye.
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Rutherford?
No.
Myers?
Aye.
Thank you, Ed. 741. Senator Kroll is. I'm sorry.
No, 741 passed out.
Oh, let's hear it again.
43?
483?
483.
Yes.
I think I was briefed yesterday, Bill.
Peter, come on up.
Oh, my God. Hey, is this?
I want you to take this one seriously.
This is a serious one. Huh?
Short pictures.
I knew it was going to be late in the day, so I thought I'd bring
one in. Some videos, actually.
I thought we'd get some videos.
Yeah, great.
I were hoping
I can't see it.
Is Martin going to testify on this?
Courtney was hoping.
Could you put it on the wall right over there behind the coffee pot, maybe? Because that'd be a...
Courtney was hoping
to make sure it's moving.
We haven't had a good graphics display since the fireworks testimony, though.
I probably would.
Let her get our bill done.
For the record, Pete Sandrock, District Attorney for Benton County. I'm the requester on this bill. And at the outset, what this bill does is to declare it to be a Class C felony, sexual abuse in the first degree, to have intercourse, deviant intercourse, or sexual penetration with a foreign object with another person without their consent. The important thing about this bill is it does not create a new crime. It does not criminalize something that is not already classified as a Class A misdemeanor within the criminal code. To have intercourse, deviant intercourse, or to penetrate someone with a foreign object without their consent is right now sexual abuse in the second degree. I think that in terms of the original intent of the drafters of the code, what 483 proposes to do is consistent with the original drafters' expectations. Take a look first at sex abuse in the first degree as it now exists. It has two essential elements, sexual contact, which is defined in the definitional section of the code, plus the element of forcible compulsion. If you change the element of sexual contact to a more specific type of contact, and that would be intercourse, even intercourse, or penetration with a foreign object, but you don't change the mental or the element of forcible compulsion, you automatically elevate what was sex abuse in the first degree to rape one, sodomy one, or sexual penetration one. You elevate it by changing that particular element. You elevate it, in fact, 2 degrees from a C felony to an A felony. So that the original drafters of the code could see and understood that even though the element of forcible compulsion was the same, the type of sexual contact involved in intercourse, penetration of a foreign object was so much more intense that even though the forcible compulsion was the same, it deserved to be treated more harshly by making it an A felony. Similarly, they viewed that if you had sexual contact with someone without their consent, which is the definition of sex abuse 2 in the current code, if you changed that sort of a quasi-mental element of lack of consent up to forcible compulsion, that should elevate the crime to seriousness. What 483 would do would be to say that in those situations in which there has been a form of sexual contact without someone's consent, but that sexual contact is of the more intense variety, then we ought to recognize that it should be a more serious offense going from an A misdemeanor to a C felony. Just as the drafters of the code did when they recognized the difference between sex abuse 1 and rape 1. When you went from sexual contact to the more intense form of behavior, that in itself elevated the seriousness of the offense. Now, in terms of what sort of behavior are we reaching by changing sex abuse in the first degree, we're probably reaching the sort of behavior at the charging level, where the DA is going to charge, in many cases of someone who abuses a position of authority to enter into sexual intercourse with someone. I can think, for example, of the rogue cop who takes roadside bail, so to speak. The victim does not consent to intercourse, having been pulled over for some alleged traffic violation, but she is not subjected to any form of forcible compulsion. The officer does not threaten her with a gun. There are no implied threats. It is merely his position that causes her to succumb to the intercourse. The employer situation, in which the victim communicates a lack of consent, but is not subjected to any form of forcible compulsion. Oftentimes, this sort of behavior could be reached under the coercion statute, which is a C felony.